Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
From VOA Learning English, this is As It Is. I'm Mario Ritter in Washington.
And I'm Anna Mateo. This week, we hear about an effort to preserve traditional European Jewish culture from the end of World War II.
But first, we learn about the film industry in Nigeria. Nigerian filmmakers are fighting illegal copying and sale of movies on DVDs throughout Nigeria.
This reduces the amount of money they can make from their work. Income from a business is called revenue, and a budget is a plan on how to use money for a project. You will hear both of these words in the upcoming story.
One of the problems the story talks about is piracy. Piracy is the illegal sale or use of someone else's work. And digital simply means the use of computer technology. Now, Bob Doty brings us the story.
120 knots. 130 knots.
That audio is from a 2012 movie from director Obi Amolonya. It is called Last Flight to Abuja. The film tells the true story of a plane crash. Nigerian funny man Ayo Makun made the movie 30 Days in Atlanta. It earned more money than any other Nigerian film.
I was here come like Jack Hotel or saying they work for oil and gas for you.
So now kerosene attendant should be.
I'm not calling this Akon Brazo.
Who is you? Just saying your wife with that.
The film tells the story of a month-long visit to the United States by a Nigerian man and a member of his family. American professors and movie industry workers recently met for 2 weeks with 30 Nigerian film producers at the UCLA Film School. Among the Nollywood movie makers was Fidelis Duker. He wanted to learn how to better advertise his movies. He says the Nigerian film industry is very big.
If an industry that employs close to 1 million people, either directly or indirectly, and has close to about $500 million in revenue annually.
The movie industry could have earned even more if not for sales of film piracy. Illegally produced copies of movies are sold in many markets. The Nigerian government has promised to stop such sales. Nigeria produces more than 1,000 films each year. Most are made quickly on low-cost digital equipment. The films usually cost tens of thousands of dollars to make. That is a small budget for a feature film. Major Hollywood movies can cost $200 million or more. Many movies produced in Nigeria are not shown in movie theaters. They are made into DVDs and sold to people directly. At the UCLA Film School, Nollywood producers learned about both the art and business of movie making. Hollywood actress Diane Ladd told them, cooperation is more important than competition in movie making.
When we in the arts work together, we're promoting culture. And remember, if a civilization loses its culture, you lose the civilization.
I'm Bob Doty.
Thanks, Bob. I'm Mario Ritter. You are listening to As It Is.
Don't go away. We'll be right back after a short break.
Welcome back to As It Is, 70 years have passed since World War II ended. By the year 1948, many refugees from the war had left Europe for the United States. That summer, American Ben Stonehill made tape recordings of Jews who had survived German death camps.
Now that cultural history is available to people around the world through the internet. Marcia James has the story.
That is 17-year-old Marcia Leon in a recording made in 1948. It is one of over 1,000 songs gathered from World War II refugees who had moved to the United States. Ben Stonehill was an immigrant himself and a Jew. By trade, he was a carpet installer, covering the floors of homes and offices. But he also had a strong interest in preserving Yiddish culture. Miriam Isaacs is a language expert specializing in Yiddish. She explains that after the Holocaust destroyed the heart of Yiddish culture, very little was left.
There was an awareness that Jews had an important culture and that these cultural treasures were in danger of being lost, and that these survivors were the last authentic carriers of this Eastern European Jewish culture. And so he took it upon himself to do this recording.
Nearly every weekend during the summer of 1948, Ben Stonehill went to work. He carried borrowed recording equipment on the train from his home in Queens to the hotel in Manhattan. Once he got there, he asked each person to sing whatever song they felt like singing. A short time ago, we heard Marcia Leon singing Tuk 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 into Stonehill's recorder as a teenager. Nearly 70 years later, she had plenty of memories of her visits to the Hotel Marseille in 1948. She had immigrated to New York in 1946 and would come to the hotel from her home nearby to meet boys.
I remember the lobby, it was full of people. You had older people sitting on suitcases toward the back. There was a balcony with refugees coming in and out that I really paid very little attention to, but the action, the younger people were all in the lobby. It kind of hummed, you know, it was like an orchestra of people kind of melding and working together.
The huge project of examining the 39 hours of recordings and organizing the songs fell to Miriam Isaacs. She has spent the past 3 years on this process.
Because it's only almost entirely just an oral archive, I often don't know who's doing the singing. We know very little about the singers. Occasionally, we have their names and where they come from, but very often not.
As of now, Miriam Isaacs has written down the words for 66 of the songs. They are now listed on the Center for Traditional Music and Dance website. The site also includes the original recording. I'm Marcia James.
And I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Mario Ritter. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is In the News. At least 16 people were killed early Friday in a firebomb attack on a nightclub in the Egyptian capital, Cairo. Officials say they do not know why the El Sayed restaurant in the Agusa neighborhood was attacked. Security officials say the attack was not linked to terrorism. The Interior Ministry said the attack happened after a disagreement between customers and restaurant workers. But earlier, the state news agency reported an official said three men on a motorcycle threw a firebomb into the nightclub and fled. An official told the Reuters news agency the attacker was a former employee who had recently been removed from the restaurant. Islamic extremists have carried out many attacks in Egypt since Mohamed Morsi was ousted as president in 2013. Morsi is a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. The military has been holding him in detention. A militant group that says it supports the Islamic State terrorist group has claimed responsibility for many of the attacks. Most of the attacks have targeted government facilities. Most of them have taken place in the Sinai Peninsula, where many militants live and operate. The attacks have greatly reduced the number of visitors to Egypt. Also this week, Egypt's parliamentary election ended Wednesday. Experts believe most voters marked their ballots for supporters of President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi. Some experts say few people voted. El-Sisi was not a candidate, but experts said they believe the election will give him strong support in parliament, which has about 600 seats. They said they believe his supporters will approve 200 laws he has put into place by presidential order. Last year, a new constitution was approved. The constitution lets Egyptian lawmakers remove a president and call for early elections. Even though few people voted, election workers said they were excited because the country has not had a parliament since 2012. Johan Said, an election worker in Cairo, said, "I love my homeland. I love Egypt. I hope the right candidate will win. I hope all the candidates will win, including myself." Some observers said some voters were paid for their votes. Lawyer Sameh El-Deep said some of the candidates are trying to win votes with bribes, and it is changing which candidates they are voting for. Some observers say vote buying in Egypt is common and operates like a large business. Essam Azmi, an election monitor, said buying votes has become like the stock market. The morning opens with one price, and in the afternoon, it's a higher price. The highest prices are just before the polling stations close. The new parliament is expected to meet for the first time next month. And that's In the News from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Jones-Cruz.
VOA Special English Program, American Stories. Our story today is called $1,000. It was written by O. Henry. Here is Steve Ember with the story.
$1,000, said the lawyer Tolman in a severe and serious voice, and here is the money. Young Gillian touched the thin package of $50 bills and laughed. It's such an unusual amount, he explained kindly to the lawyer. If it had been $10,000, a man might celebrate with a lot of fireworks. Even $50 would have been less trouble.
You heard the reading of your uncle's will after he died, continued the lawyer Tolman. I do not know if you paid much attention to its details. I must remind you of one. You are required to provide us with a report of how you use this $1,000 as soon as you have spent it. I trust that you will obey the wishes of your late uncle.
You may depend on it, said the young man respectfully. Gillian went to his club. He searched for a man he called Old Bryson. Old Bryson was a calm, antisocial man, about 40 years old. He was in a corner reading a book. When he saw Gillian coming near, he took a noisy, deep breath, laid down his book, and took off his glasses. I have a funny story to tell you, said Gillian.
I wish you would tell it to someone in the billiard room, said old Bryson. You know how I hate your stories.
This is a better one than usual, said Gillian, rolling a cigarette, and I'm glad to tell it to you. It's too sad and funny to go with the rattling of billiard balls. I've just come from a meeting with my late uncle's lawyers. He leaves me an even $1,000. Now, what can a man possibly do with $1,000? Old Bryson showed very little interest.
I thought the late Septimus Gillian was worth something like $500,000.
He was, agreed Gillian happily, and that's where the joke comes in. He has left a lot of his money to an organism. That is, part of it goes to the man who invents a new bacillus, and the rest to establish a hospital for doing away with it again. There are one or two small, unimportant gifts on the side. The butler and the housekeeper get a seal ring and $10 each. His nephew gets $1,000.
Were there any others mentioned in your uncle's will? Asked old Bryson.
None, said Gillian. Well, there is a Miss Hayden. My uncle was responsible for her. She lived in his house. She's a quiet thing, musical, the daughter of somebody who was unlucky enough to be his friend. I forgot to say that she was in on the ring and $10 joke, too. I wish I had been. Then I could have had two bottles of wine, given the ring to the waiter, and had the whole business off my hands. Now tell me what a man can do with $1,000. Old Bryson rubbed his glasses and smiled. And when old Bryson smiled, Gillian knew that he intended to be more offensive than ever.
There are many good things a man could do with $1,000, said Bryson. You, he said with a gentle laugh, why, Bobby Gillian, there's only one reasonable thing you could do. You can go and buy Miss Lotta Laurier a diamond necklace with the money. And then take yourself off to Idaho and inflict your presence upon a ranch. I advise a sheep ranch, as I have a particular dislike for sheep.
Thanks, said Gillian as he rose from his chair. I knew I could depend on you, old Bryson. You've hit on the very idea. I wanted to spend the money on one thing, because I have to turn in a report for it, and I hate itemizing. Gillian phoned for a cab and said to the driver, "The stage entrance of the Columbine Theater." The theater was crowded. Miss Lotta Laurier was preparing for her performance when her assistant spoke the name of Mr. Gillian. "Let it in," said Miss Laurier. "Now, what is it, Bobby? I'm going on stage in 2 minutes." "It won't take 2 minutes for me. What do you say to a little thing in the jewelry line? I can spend $1,000. "Say, Bobby," said Miss Laurier, "did you see that necklace Della Stacy had on the other night? It cost $2,200 at Tiffany's." Miss Laurier was called to the stage for her performance. Gillian slowly walked out to where his cab was waiting. "What would you do with $1,000 if you had it?" he asked the driver.
"Open a drinking place," said the driver quickly. "I know a place I could take money in with both hands. I've got it worked out, if you were thinking of putting up the money."
"Oh, no," said Gillian. "I was just wondering." 8 blocks down Broadway, Gillian got out of the cab. A blind man sat on the sidewalk selling pencils. Gillian went out and stood in front of him. "Excuse me, but would you mind telling me what you would do if you had $1,000? Asked Gillian. The blind man took a small book from his coat pocket and held it out. Gillian opened it and saw that it was a bank deposit book. It showed that the blind man had a balance of $1,785 in his bank account. Gillian returned the bank book and got back into the cab. "I forgot something," he said. "You may drive to the law offices of Tolman and Sharp." Lawyer Tolman looked at Gillian in a hostile and questioning way. "I beg your pardon," said Gillian cheerfully, "but was Miss Hayden left anything by my uncle's will in addition to the ring and the $10?
"Nothing," said Mr. Tolman.
"I thank you very much, sir," said Gillian, and went to his cab. He gave the driver the address of his late uncle's home. Miss Hayden was writing letters in the library. The small, thin woman wore black clothes, but you would have noticed her eyes. Gillian entered the room as if the world were unimportant. "I have just come from old Tolman's," he explained. "They have been going over the papers down there. They found a..." Gillian searched his memory for a legal term. "They found an amendment or a postscript or something to the will. It seemed that my uncle had second thoughts and willed you $1,000. Tolman asked me to bring you the money. Here it is." Gillian laid the money beside her hand on the desk. Miss Hayden turned white. "Oh," she said, and again, "Oh." Gillian half turned and looked out the window. In a low voice, he said, "I suppose, of course, that you know I love you." "I am sorry," said Miss Hayden, as she picked up her money. "There is no use?" asked Gillian, almost lightheartedly. "I am sorry," she said again. "May I write a note?" asked Gillian with a smile. Miss Hayden supplied him with paper and pen, and then went back to her writing table. Gillian wrote a report of how he spent the $1,000. Paid by Robert Gillian, $1,000 on account of the eternal happiness owed by heaven to the best and dearest woman on earth. Gillian put the note into an envelope. He bowed to Miss Hayden and left. His cab stopped again at the offices of Tolman and Sharp. "I have spent the $1,000, he said cheerfully to Tolman, "and I have come to present a report of it as I agreed." He threw a white envelope on the lawyer's table. Without touching the envelope, Mr. Tolman went to a door and called his partner, Sharp. Together, they searched for something in a large safe. They brought out a big envelope sealed with wax. As they opened the envelope, they shook their heads together over its contents. Then Tolman became the spokesman.
"Mr. Gillian," he said, "there was an addition to your uncle's will. It was given to us privately, with instructions that it not be opened until you had provided us with a full report of your handling of the $1,000 received in the will. As you have satisfied the conditions, my partner and I have read the addition. I will explain to you the spirit of its contents. In the event that your use of the $1,000 shows that you possess any of the qualifications that deserve reward, you stand to gain much more. If your disposal of the money in question has been sensible, wise, or unselfish, it is in our power to give you bonds to the value of $50,000. But if you have used this money in a wasteful, foolish way, as you have in the past, the $50,000 is to be paid to Miriam Hayden, ward of the late Mr. Gillian, without delay. Now, Mr. Gillian, Mr. Sharp and I will examine your report of the $1,000. Mr. Tolman reached for the envelope. Gillian was a little quicker in taking it up. He calmly tore the report and its cover into pieces and dropped them into his pocket. "It's all right," he said smilingly. "There isn't a bit of need to bother you with this. I don't suppose you would understand these itemized bets anyway. I lost the $1,000 on the races. Good day to you, gentlemen." Tolman and Sharp shook their heads mournfully at each other when Gillian left. They heard him whistling happily in the hallway as he waited for the elevator.
$1,000 was written by O. Henry. It was adapted for Special English by Luan Davis. The storyteller and producer was Steve Ember. You can read and listen to other American stories on our website, voaspecialenglish.com. I'm Faith Lapidus.